Hey, Wes, what's up, brother?
Oh man, I can't be more excited about having our guest today. It's just going to be a great one.
It is going to be a great one. We were just talking off camera with him, and if we've both got to know Dave Sanderson, what a first class guy. Not only was the event that led up to the I guess his super fame, if you will, the Miracle on the Hudson with Sully. He's just a great guy and a business leader and a sales leader and just an all around great guy, right?
Yeah, and we were talking off camera, and we were talking about how you can network and just by asking, you know, get things that, you know, people don't normally think that they can get, you know, one of which him being on the show. But you and I had a very similar situation that we've kind of drawn on, you know, in the past. And I don't know if you remember what I'm going to talk about, but you had gotten a piece of pie. And we asked the waitress, you know, does that come with ice cream? And she said it could.
Exactly.
And and that really is the attitude that you need to have in life you know, what you can do, not what you can't do. So I think that we're going to hear a lot of that, you know, throughout this interview. And I think that's, you know, extremely important to have that attitude.
It is. And you're right. That's a great segue into going to Dave is. You know, you never know. You're always moments, right, key away from being put in that position. Most of us, luckily in life, not in the position Dave was put in. But with that said, sometimes you got to react, and you got to react quickly. And Dave, as we'll talk in our story, didn't react in, I'm just going to rush off this airplane and save myself. You know, he made the decisions in a very quick period of time. And that's, I think, key is that we make decisions, and sometimes they're life altering. Sometimes they're just maybe saves a sale, or it could be as simple as, you know, you decided to stop quick instead of running the red light and you didn't get T-boned. Right. But it's all about making decisions and putting yourself out there. But so anyway, as interesting as you and I are with each other, I think Dave's way more interesting
and interesting looking maybe, but
okay. I was going to go there, but okay. Yeah, you are pretty interesting looking. You look good. You look good in Frankenmuth and German Michigan. I don't know. We'll go with one or the other.
Yeah, we'll go with one of those. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's bring Dave on.
Let's do it. I'm tired of talking to you. All right. Not a lot. But. All right, buddy. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to Building Wins Live with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director, Wes Wyatt.
Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins.
Now, let's get to the show.
Hey, there he is, Dave. How are you, my friend?
Randy, thank you for having me. I'm outstanding. How hope you are doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Life is good. A lot of good stuff going on. A lot of positive stuff going on. And none of the least being having you on today. I do appreciate the last few months getting to know you and the friendship and just what you bring to the table. So, again, thank you for being here today.
I'm honored to be with you. Thank you for inviting me to be on.
Oh, my pleasure. So let's get right down to it. Yeah. First, before we get to, you know, the lead-in, which I've already gave people a little bit, but who is Dave Sanderson? And then we'll get into what the probably the big event we'll talk about and what you've done with that since and during. But a little background. Who's Dave Sanderson for anybody that's silly enough not to know?
Well, thank you. No, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that haven't really heard my story. But, you know, I had 37 years in sales and sales management. So I grew up in sales. That was actually my second job. First job was hotel restaurant management, which I didn't know anything about. But my dad told me I had to get out of the house after 30 days after graduating from college. And he tell people, one of the great things about my dad is he was a man of his word. He always he said, your word is your bond. And in 30 days, I didn't have a job. So he helped me get that first one. But that led me to going to Charlotte, which I then started picking up my sales career. And, you know, I did that for over 37 years. And then during that time, I had the honor and privilege of being the head of security for a gentleman named Tony Robbins. And I've heard of Tony. Tony's a tremendous individual, but not only inspirational, but a master strategist. I mean, it's just being in his presence, you learn so much. And I was very privileged to have that access. And like he talks about, it's true. Proximity is power. It gave me a lot of insight and things that helped me, what we call it, compress decades into days. And then, you know, during that sales career and my time with Tony, then all of a sudden I got involved with a plane crash that I'd never thought that I'd be involved with, which changed the course and direction of my life.
Yes, the plane crash. Yeah. The let's just dive right in. Tell us about the tell us about that day, because if you can't be alive today and not have remembered that. I still remember, and then we'll go there. But for anybody that don't remember, I might not have the terms exactly that Sully said, but when he said he's going to put it in the Hudson in the control tower, right? He says, "You're going to do what?" Because that's an unsurvivable scenario, typically, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, you know, as you reflect back, and I tell you what happened that night while I was in the hospital recovering. That night it was very chaotic. I don't, you know. A private room is really not a private room when you go through a plane crash, because everybody's coming in and trying to get to you. But they had the TV running, Randy, which is really interesting. And all they kept showing is plane crashes in water the whole night on TV. And everyone they showed, no one survived.
Right.
So having the opportunity to when he did what he did with the skill set and he had to have to get it down, that was an amazing skill set. He did a fabulous job that day. And I will be forever grateful. But then there's another part to that story, which you get it down, yay team, but now you got to get out.
Right.
And that's where all the fun begins for me.
I guess. So let's start, if you don't mind, at the beginning, because I've read your book. It's a great book, and it's riveting, actually, and is a term I think fits for that. Because you did such a good job of, I was literally hair standing up at times, almost like, because you felt like I was there with you. And it's so well written, number one. But so tell us about that day. Lead us into that day, if you will.
Nothing extraordinary about that day. I mean, it was 11 degrees and snowing in New York. You know, so I mean, that's middle of winter New York. That's nothing extraordinary. I started that day at about 5 o'clock in the morning, because we were working in a distribution center in Brooklyn, which opened up at 2 o'clock in the morning. And all the trucks started beginning their shifts about 4 or 5 o'clock. So we wanted to be there while all the activity was going on, right? So that's what we did. We were doing systems, basically evaluating their distribution and manufacturing systems. That's why we were there that day. So we got done about 10 o'clock, because about 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, all the droughts have already been done. So all they're now is doing cleaning up, getting ready for the next time. So it's like, okay, great. I get to go home early. So right. I called the travel agent, work with her, and she put me on US Airways flight 1549. So I was not supposed to be on that plane. So, you know, got to the airport a little early that day, you know, but typical New York, if you've been out of LaGuardia, nothing unusual, is that planes were delayed. It was 11 degrees of snowing, so no big deal, right? Happens all the time. And I was one of the first set of passengers to board the plane because of my status, because I travel so much. We were talking about that earlier. I mean, I traveled over 100,000 miles a year. So when you travel that much, you get some privilege. It just is what it is, right? You get some privilege. So I went back to my seat. I see it was the seat 15A. That's four rows behind the left wing. And I got to tell people, I didn't pay attention. I mean, I'd done this hundreds of times. No big deal, right? Didn't pay attention. I didn't know where anything was at. And then as we took off, nothing extraordinary about that until about 60 seconds after we took off is when there was a major explosion on the plane. That's the moment where I'm sure other people in that plane, because I've talked to them, that's the moment we all thought, okay, what's going on now? There's something going on. And though, you know, I heard one explosion, so, you know, planes lose engines. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So all this means is I'm going to get home late. That's exactly what I thought. I said, well, that get home early ain't going to happen right now, right? But then he starts banking. I thought he was going back to the airport. Then you look out the window, and all of a sudden you see Manhattan up close. And you're like, I've never seen Manhattan that close. And then all of a sudden you look out, you see this bridge coming up, and he's like, never seen a bridge before. And then you get close to the bridge, and it's when the captain said his only words he said the entire time on this plane. This is your captain, brace for impact. That's the moment I knew, and I knew others knew at that moment, it's not good, because something's going to happen, and all you can see in front of you is water. And then so immediately at that point in time, you got to start checking in. I mean, you got to get your ducks in a row. And, you know, I'm a Christian. I prayed. I'm like, you know, one of the things I prayed for is whoever the dude is up front, man, just get me down. Mm-hmm. You know, just get me down. then I prayed just to forgive my sins, because at this point in time, it doesn't look like we're going to make it. And I wanted to make sure that I was good with the guy up top. So if something did happen, which looked like it was probably going to happen, at least I would have a clear pathway, right? At least I'd have a way. Okay, I checked in. I forget. Hopefully he forgave me. And now if something does happen, I'm going to probably be in a better place in a matter of seconds. But fortunately, he got, as we talked about, he got the plane down, which was masterful how he did that. I mean, he had no power at all, and he glided that plane, you know, from only 3,000 feet up into the river. Mm-hmm. But now you're in a river, and water's coming in very quickly because of the way he hit. The back of the plane came dislodged, and water started coming in the back of the plane. So where I was on the plane, Randy, was about ankle to knee deep water already. Wow. And you got to remember, this is winter. It's 36-degree water. But you don't feel it because now you've got adrenaline. Mm-hmm. Like now you have to take action. And one of the things, the reason I call my book Moments Matter is because one of the things I realized after all this, all these moments in my life were there for a reason. And I sort of detail that in my talk. But one of the things I talk about is, you know, I played sports. And in sports, I don't know if you played sports. When mm-hmm. I played sports, the coach always had a game plan for the game. Right. Well, we're going down. This is the game, right? I mean, I got to be in the game now. So I had a game plan. And my game plan was, after we crossed over the bridge, was I said, I'll up out. Because if I did survive, now I got to figure out how to get out. So my mind was going, I'll up out the entire time. And then now you're down, you know, all of a sudden water's about waist level deep. It's like time to go. So when I got to the aisle, I had my game plan. But then something happened to change that day and change the entire situation at that moment. And it was, I heard my mom speak to me. My mom passed away in 1997, but there's something she would tell me when I was a child that came into my head. It was, if you do the right thing, God will take care of you. And she would tell me that when I was a child, but you know, when you're a kid, you don't listen to it, right? But when I heard that, it's like, now you got to make a decision. I mean, candidly, Randy, I could have left and been fine, right? Mm-hmm. But you know what? I grew up in a small town outside of Cincinnati, Ohio, where everybody knew everybody and everybody took care of everybody. So instead of going out, I went towards the back of the plane, climbed over the seats, see if anybody needed help. And things were moving back there pretty quickly because now you got chest deep water, because the back of the plane is actually, if you see that picture right there on that book, mm-hmm. the back of the plane is actually underwater.
Wow, okay.
So water was about chest level deep. So things were moving. So I got behind everybody, started going out like myself, and it was dark and you got luggage just floating in the water and trying to get out. And the first light that I saw was on that right side where you see under the U.S., where it says U.S. Airways, under that mm-hmm. U. I started, that's 10F. That's the door 10F. I started to get out. I looked out. There was no room on the wing of the boat for me. It was already filled up. But all of a sudden, people are already being rescued just a couple of minutes after a plane crash. So I tell that's a miracle right there. Just someone there to help you in you're 60 feet deep water after a plane crash. There's someone that's there to help you. That's the start of a miracle.
That is.
But that's why I was in the plane for over 7 minutes, waist deep in 36 degree water, because there was no room for me to get out of the plane.
Well, and the fact, Dave, that you, in that moment, it was impressive to me and tells me about all I ever needed to know about you, to be honest, was that, like you said, moments in time, which moments matter, I should say, you could have just walked out of the plane and nobody would have thought different of it. Because right, most people would do that, you know, and I think all of us would hope that in a like situation, you would do the right thing. Unfortunately, or fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, you don't know till you're in that position, right?
Yep.
And so that speaks a lot to upbringing, to background, to character, to stop, listen to that voice in your head and the faith and just go, no, we're going to do what's right here. And I, you know, that's pretty, you deserve all the compliment in the world for making that. Cause there's a lot of people probably out of fear, desperation, would have been climbing over seats, women and kids to get out themselves. Right. Cause that's the normal.
Yeah. No one lost their heads. That's one of the unique things about, no one lost their heads at all. Everybody was, the term I used that night with Katie Couric on CBS was, it was control chaos where, yeah, it was chaotic, man. You got a lot of things happening, but it was controlled. No one was losing it, right?
Good.
And I like another thing is, you know, talk about the moments matter, because One of some of the moments that I had, as I mentioned, I had the opportunity to be with Tony Robbins. One of the things Tony teaches is how to manage your mindset, right? Mm-hmm. Fortunately for me, I had so, it was so ingrained in me on what I need to do to make sure I can stay focused and keep my mind focused on what the mission at the moment. That served me greatly. That served me greatly because some people, I think, as you mentioned, they weren't able to control their mindset. They may have been going getting a little bit of irrational, say it that mm-hmm. way. But fortunately for me, I had that, which served me at that moment in time. And that's why I tell, especially the youth, the millennials and Gen Zers, the youth, all these moments are there for a reason. You may just go through life and think this is happening. No, 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 no. These moments are happening for a reason because there's going to be a moment in your life sometime because no one gets through life unscathed. I don't care who you are. Right. Something's going to happen. You're going to get cancer. You got a car wreck. Something's going to happen, right? You got to be able to manage this. And some of the moments in the past will give you that reference point. If you can call on that, if you're able to trigger that in your mind, so you know what? Back when I was 12 years old, I had to do something like this. Can I call on that moment to be able to give me the reference I needed to be able to handle it at that moment in time?
Wow. Yeah. That's great advice. It's great advice. And you know, like you said, nobody gets out of anything without unscathed, as you said. And I think it's easy to forget the lessons that we've learned in the past. And I think once in a while, it doesn't hurt, right, to go back to some of those crucial moments in life that you, and what did I do? Learn from the what I screwed up. But also, there's a phrase that I wish I'd have wrote it. And if nobody claims it, I will. But, the success leaves crumbs, right? Yep. And I think equally, look at what did I do in the past that served me well, like you just said, and because if you don't remind yourself of that occasionally, you always want to be prepared because none of us are 1 minute away from possible who knows what, right?
Anything can happen, especially right now in this world. The total uncertainty going on in this world right now. I mean, you could be one day you're having a party out there, right, at some concert, and all of a sudden, someone's coming at you with bombs, right? Yep. So you never know what's going to happen. And that's why, I tell these folks, it's like, one of the key things you can do to help yourself. And I talk about this religiously. And my mentor is, Bill is the one who brought this to me. Is everybody needs to have a mentor. Mm-hmm. In my second book, From Turmoil to Triumph, Tony Robbins actually writes a little note about that. It's on the front of the book about how he became Tony Robbins. It's because he had a mentor. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why I'm so passionate. I tell everybody how I end my talks, Randy, is, it's incumbent on each of us to mentor somebody else before you pass away. Because the last thing my mentor made me promise him before he passed away in September of 1997 was don't let it die with me. Mm. He gave me his lessons. He gave it to me not only auditorily and visually, but he gave me his handwritten notes he wrote in 1929. And he gave those to me. He said, do not let this die with you. And so I am passionate about this. That's why I wrote this book, From Turmoil to Triumph. It tells a story about the power of a mentor. But also what reveals is this, Randy, something you just said a moment ago or referred to a moment ago. My mom taught me the same things. But sometimes your parents are too close to you, right? Right. And when you're 15, do you listen to your mom and dad?
Zero.
Zero. Right. But, if you have that wise person, right, who's run the race already, and they tell you something from a different angle, you're like, well, that makes sense, mm-hmm. right? And all of a sudden, the pieces of the puzzle start to come together. It's like, you know what? There's a difference between being intelligent and wise. Mike's extremely intelligent. I'm wise. The difference is I've used my intelligence and actually practically used it. They don't know how to use their intelligence. That's the difference between being wise and intelligent. Mm-hmm. You can be smart all day long, but if you don't know how to apply it, it doesn't matter.
Right. Right. There's a lot of folks walking around there around life with a lot of letters after their name, right? Yeah. But they can't figure out how to come in out of the rain, as they say, right?
My sister has all that, and when she got out of college, my dad's biggest worry was she can't even barely tie her shoes, right? But she was smart, man. Intelligent. She's intelligent beyond intelligent, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the I know by reading your book and in listening to you and different things you've done, you talked about the chaotic on the plane and getting off the plane, but it was a whirlwind of wow when you got to the hospital for the next, few hours minimum, but then for days after that. You were on the I think they had satellite trucks set outside of your room, right?
Yeah, I mean, when everything was going on in New Jersey for me, when my wife got home from taking our son to basketball practice and picking up our daughter from high school basketball practice, there were CBS, ABC, and NBC trucks and cameras around our house waiting to interview my wife before she even knew what was going on. So, like I said, it was controlled chaos. Things are coming very quickly, and I was never my wife, myself, and the kids. We had never had anything like this before. So I had people follow me that entire next week wherever I was going until I got on a plane to go to Michigan because my company asked me to go to Michigan, which is another story for another day. But, so I had people follow me the whole time. I was on interviews. My wife was being asked. And I was just trying to get some normalcy back. But after you go through something like this, your rest of your life, there's nothing normal about the rest of your life.
Yeah. That's got to be that pulling up your wife and you said your daughter pulled up to the house. Yeah. That had to have been a, lack of a better term, what the hell moment, right, for them?
Yeah.
I mean, that had to be shocking.
Yeah, there are two kids in the house already. She had my daughter. My son was at the basketball practice. So fortunately, our minister brought him home, which was very nice. Mm-hmm. He did that later on, so my wife didn't have to come back. But, yeah, so they kind of got there, and all of a sudden they were getting bombarded. And I tell people, you hear my story, then you should hear my wife's story. Because right. The other gentleman in the hospital with me, Barry, his wife, they live about a mile away outside that back behind that TV you see back there, about a mile away. And his wife was having the same situation as my wife was. Because we're the only ones in the hospital. He was on ABC and I was on CBS. So everybody knew who we are.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. So we've touched on it, but another thing that I really want to make sure we touch on is your work with the military.
Yep.
And your love for the military. Talk to us a little bit about why you do that and why you're so drawn to some of the workouts you do, the swim events that you do with them. Because I have an older son that's old, because I'm old. He's 45 now. But he's a former Marine, Iraqi.
You're never a former Marine.
Yeah.
You're always a Marine.
That's true. True point. Always a Marine.
I was told that many times.
Yeah. Yes. And you're right. And he would tell me that if he heard me, which he'll probably call me after he watches this show and say, "Dad, they straightened you out." I have a real affinity for the military because of that, but also just because I talk a lot about love what I do and do what I love. And I get to do that because of the military and because of God and because of a lot of things, but my daily abilities to do that. Right. So what propelled your interest in being so involved with that?
Well, thank you. About 4 or 5 years before I started doing what I do with the Navy SEALs and Special Ops, I had the opportunity to start speaking at primarily Air Force bases. Hmm. And not only sharing my story, but of course the lessons from that day. And, I'm very honored to do that for our Air Force. And then about five years ago, I got invited to speak at MacDill Air Force Base for about 19,000 service people.
Wow.
Which was amazing, and which really gave me, some certainty that, you know what, I can serve in a different way, because the colonel who was in charge of the base, who's now a general, she took me out to lunch. She was telling me, saying, "Listen, you have a story to tell. These people need to hear your story." So that's how I started, but it really wasn't until 2021 when my wingman, I call it Suzanne, is my wingman. She's a Navy captain. As I was standing in the airport in Newark, New Jersey, looking at New York City, asking if I would be her partner to swim in the Hudson River for the Navy SEALs and help them raise money for those veterans who have fallen on hard times. And I said, "That's interesting." She goes, "Well, maybe give you some redemption going back in the river." "That's interesting, but I haven't swam for 40 years. I said, "Put me in touch with your SEAL guy." So she put me in touch with my SEAL guy. His name is Scuba. And that tells you something right there.
That does.
This dude is intense, right? And he asked me, Randy, he said, "Be on Thursday," this is a Monday. He said, "Thursday, be out here at 5 o'clock at this pool. I want to see you swim." Well, first test, Randy, was when I show up at 5 a.m. All right. I did in my little swimming trunks with no goggles, right? Thought I was hot stuff. And he clears the pool. So now everybody's looking at me. He says, swim 25 yards. I jumped in and I could barely get 25 yards.
Wow.
And he looked me in the eye, Randy. He said, I'm not going to take you out of this, but you'll take yourself out of this. Be here tomorrow at 5 o'clock and Coach Patty will show you how to swim. And so next morning I showed up and she did this. She goes, man, there's a lot of work to do. She goes, but if you're committed, I'm committed. So every morning at 5 o'clock, I show up, right? In 100 days, I went from barely swimming 25 yards to swimming 3.1 miles in the Hudson River, some of the roughest water in this country, with the Navy SEALs. So I tell people, there's no limitations.
Right.
There's no limitations. That's why one of the things I teach is divorce limitation, marry truth, because you can do anything you put your mind to. And this story of doing this has now led me to be able to do it again. And now with special operations in San Diego and being able to be a part of all these groups, because you probably know this. If you know anything about the military, there's an average of 22 military people commit suicide a day.
Right.
We got to do something about this. This is part of my mission now. So if I can help somebody, if I can help some of these people transitioning out to at least give them a pathway, right?
Right.
Then I've at least helped this issue. So that's how I really got involved. And I was very honored. They gave me my call sign of Miracle. So now I got my honorary call sign. And when I'm in the military, they call me Miracle.
Love it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just truly enjoy all your posts and following when you do that kind of stuff, because you're leading from the front there, my friend. And putting yourself out there doing that. And I can only imagine. I know I couldn't swim 25 yards and I'm pretty good shape for my age.
I tell you what, it will humble you very quickly.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure and what I love about that too is obviously you're a disciplinarian, a self-disciplinarian. And let's talk about that for a minute, because that's an area, a subject that is really important to me. Is I talk about discipline a lot, and I haven't always been disciplined. I've been as big of a screwball, undisciplined person you'd ever find at one point in my life. Just never do anything bad, just not necessarily doing the good things I could do because I didn't want to, or,
right.
That's a little hard to do, or I'll have a candy bar or two because I want them. And I found, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, that once discipline becomes a lifestyle, it's, and I'm going to backtrack again, habits, right? Habits are hard to break. And bad habits are very hard to break because they're usually the fun stuff, right? The air quote fun stuff you want to do, but you know you probably shouldn't do or not best for you. But I've also found, Dave, is good habits are hard to break too. When I did the 75 Hard program that Andy Frazella wrote, mm-hmm. I've been working out a lot and pretty self-conscious of eating right and doing the right stuff. But once I got towards the end, I hated that it was almost over, other than I wanted to see it done. I wanted to claim victory. I wanted to stand up on the podium and raise my trophy, so to speak, and tell everybody I finished. But the last 5 days, there was a bit of melancholy, I think, that it was coming to an end. That one thing I didn't do is, it was day 85 probably before I went even off of it, just because it would become such a habit that that's what I do. So long version of all that is I enjoy the feeling of being self-disciplined. What do you say about that?
No, I agree. I mean, habits control your flow of thought. I mean, so the habits you have control how your thoughts are coming together. And so let's go back to the swim. When he said show up every day at 5 o'clock, I was up every morning at 3:50 a.m. Right, getting my mind right,
right,
so I could do this. Hey, I still do it every day. My wife is still mad at me for getting up at 3:50 a.m. But it's a habit, because what I've realized, is a good habit for me. And basically, not only health wise, but mentally, I got structure. So if I start with that positive habit in my head, when I come in, I'm in my office by 7:15. Like, I'm like the Army. I get more stuff done by 8 o'clock than anybody else does the rest of the day. Right. So I can do things like we're doing right now.
Exactly.
So I think, one of the things I do every quarter, and I have it in my book back here, I have a thing called a habit tracker. And I write down 5 new habits a quarter. Now, they may be modifying some habits I have, right? Mm-hmm. But I have new habits because if I could do that for a quarter, then I can set myself on a pathway. Just like right now, I'm getting a knee replaced next month. I'm starting to lose 25 pounds. My wife's like, you don't need to lose 25 pounds. I'm like, well, what I found out is I'll lose 25 pounds. The healing recovery will be that much faster.
Right.
Right. So my discipline right now is, you know what? I'm looking at the pleasure side of it and the pain side of it. So it all comes down to pleasure and pain. Mm-hmm. Pleasure side is I can recover faster. The pain side is, yeah, I may not be eating as much right now, but the pleasure is outweighing the pain.
Right.
That's how I set up my habits. You know, apply pain, see the pleasure, and that gives me the pathway.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. And you know what? A thought that just popped in my head by an author. You may know the quote, the way you do, Martha Beck, the way you do anything is the way you do everything.
Right.
I love that quote. I keep that written in several spots so that I don't forget it, because I think a lot of people, and again, love your thought on this, but my take is I can't be on my A game and dedicated and the guy in my business world, but be a slump in my personal life, or vice versa, because the habits again are contradicting each other. Either I'm going to be a good guy and I'm going to be disciplined and I'm going to do things right in all aspects of my life, right? Because they're all going to trade off of each other. And I think a lot of people say, well, I know I'm kind of I don't eat right and I don't do anything else. And I'm kind of bad about a lot of things, but when it comes to work, though, buddy, I am on my A game. You're not on the A game that you could be on if you did it, I guess, more disciplined in all aspects of your life. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, and what I would, you know, maybe add to that is one of the things I think people are looking for right now that's lacking is people are looking for people that are congruent, right? Mm. They walk their talk. They exactly what you said. They don't have to see a different person in your business and different person in your relationships, different person in your personal life. You are congruent throughout your life. And I think there's so many people see this right now, especially with our leadership. Our leadership, you know, I mean, you look at, you know, I don't care which party you're looking at. It doesn't really matter. But they're not congruent. And right. Usually the most congruent person wins the election. Most of the time it happens that way. And so if you look at the reason what happened in 2016, it was because the person who won, you may not like him. You may not like his boisterous ways, but he was congruent. I mean, mm-hmm. He had a message. Where the other person was not congruent, right? And I think what people are looking for is if they want to work with somebody and be like in sales, I am who I am. And you may not be your cup of tea, which I appreciate, and you may not be my cup of tea. But at least I'm not going to change my value set to modify for you. This is my values. This is how I live. And yes, I go to church. I do all these things because to me, it's the right way to do things. Mm-hmm. So I think it all comes around to being congruent.
Exactly. Great view on that. So, Dave, you've been incredibly kind with your time, and I appreciate it. And as I said earlier, I appreciate getting to know you better and the friendship. And so as we kind of wind down, what did we miss today? Should I ask questions? Wes is always on top of it in case I forget. Well, what did we miss today that you would really said, Randy, I wish you quit talking for a minute and ask me this?
Well, I think the one thing I really want to get out, and I'm passionate about, as I mentioned, I referenced this earlier about my mentor, because that circumstance came about because I showed up and he showed up and all of a sudden, you know, he saw something in me that he needed to leave his legacy with. And that happened to me in 1984. And for 13 years, he mentored me and he did things with me and for me that I would have never even thought about. But it opened my eyes to what was possible. That's why my new book is called The Limitless Way. It was limitless. And so when he passed on these lessons to me in 1997, he said, do not let it die with you. Mm-hmm. What he was basically telling me is like, you know, I've given you the wisdom, right? There's nothing new, Randy. There's nothing new in this. Right. But I gave it to you. Now, it's coming on you to make sure somebody has this. And so when you walk away, go to your heavenly gift. Now, someone has the same opportunity to do what I did for you. So I think that's why I'm so passionate about, if I can implore anybody, be a mentor or find a mentor. Whether that's me, that's Randy, it doesn't matter who you find, somebody And they will, like we talked about earlier, just ask. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how to find a mentor. Well, ask.
Right.
I didn't even ask Bill. Bill offered it up on Christmas Eve in 1984. It's Christmas Eve. And I'll leave you with the story. He came to the restaurant early. And he drove in. He said, I want to show you what I got Bonnie for Christmas, his wife. It was a brand new blue Corvette. I never seen a Corvette. I couldn't spell Corvette, right? It was the coolest car I ever saw, right?
Right.
He threw me the key, said, let's take a ride. And he said, we went up and down Woodlawn Road in Charlotte. He came back. I gave him the key. He said, Bill, Bonnie's going to dig this. He goes, you need one of these. I said, Bill, I'm making $13,000 a year. I can barely afford my rent. He goes, that's your problem. It's your mindset. He said, let me show you what it takes to be successful. See, he saw something, right? It's like, we're all struggling at 24, 25, 26, right?
Right.
Nobody has it figured out. So if you're going to get your outcomes, we talked about earlier, you got to compress decades into days. And how you do that is find somebody who's walked their talk, do exactly what they've done, right? Success leaves clues.
Right.
Do exactly what they do. You too will get the outcome. And that's exactly what I'm implored to teach right now and share with people is, I've got it. You've got it. I will share with you, but you've got to step up and ask.
Right.
I may not offer it to you like Bill. If you ask me, like we did it for this interview, you ask.
Yes.
That's it. Just ask. And, like the Bible says, right? Open the door, right?
Exactly. That's a part of a closing thought on that is a part of that's human nature is you fear rejection. You fear the unknown, but just what's the worst case that will happen? Can you survive the worst case?
Yeah.
And the worst case of with my asking you early on to connect, with my asking you to come on this podcast, and as we've connected and back and forth, like we said off air, I think, worst case scenario, you say, go away, dummy, or not answered at all.
Yeah.
And I'd still be in with all of that, you and I wouldn't be talking today. And you're right. How many sales are lost in the world because as a sales guy, we're afraid to ask because we're afraid we may get no. Well, it is no if you don't ask. Most customers, not always, some of them will just go ahead and they want the deal. But a large percentage of customers, the difference between being successful and really successful, if you don't ask them, they may not offer. So just ask the question, what's the worst case? Can we go ahead? Is there a way we can see ourselves to move forward here? Can we sample you? Can we get whatever that looks like? It doesn't matter for this conversation.
What would it mean if you could do this and that using this?
Exactly. Right. Just ask the open-end questions.
And all this. So yeah,
good stuff.
But thank you very much for asking that question because I just parting word, find a mentor and be a mentor.
Love it. Great parting words. David, thank you, my friend. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Randy.
All right. Cheers. All right. Dave Sanderson. Was that good stuff? Check his books. Follow him on social media. The guy's inspiring. He's a leader. He's the real deal. And blessed to have him in my circle. And that's it. Another great conversation, as always, here on Building Wins Live. And I just want to say this. You get one to go around, live it, love it, own it, love what you do and do what you love. And go make today your best day ever. Till tomorrow. Cheers, my friends.
Thank you for listening to Building Wins Live.
You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.